Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on The Brian Lehrer Show, we'll meet New York City's first ever Mexican-American city council member, Carlos Menchaca, instantly a rising star in New York politics, was elected this month in the district that runs from Red Hook to Sunset Park. Also today, $4 billion of the record J.P. Morgan Chase settlement is supposed to go toward relief for struggling homeowners. We'll tell you who might qualify for help and how, from the biggest government settlement ever with a corporation. And we'll also ask, is there really a more important way to spend the other $9 billion? But first, whatever happened to stop and frisk? A defining issue in the mayoral race, new figures from the NYPD say the number of stops in July through September was about 20,000. Now, that's down 80% from last summer, down 80%. And police recovered only half the number of firearms as they did last year in those months, 99 guns as opposed to 198. The announcement comes on the same day that Mayor Bloomberg signed a bill to ban tobacco sales to anyone under 21. It used to be 18. So maybe you'll soon get stopped and frisked for cigarettes. Let's talk about both these things and more with DNA Info criminal justice editor Murray Weiss. Hi, Murray. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. Thanks for having me.
You're over 21, so you can still buy cigarettes. You know that.
Yeah, I used to smoke them like a fiend, but I quit 30 years ago, so I'm okay.
All right, you and Michael Bloomberg. And listeners, let's crowdsource the reporting on the stop and frisk story. Are you seeing the police behave differently in your neighborhood? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Or if you are a police officer, are you changing your protocols? Has someone told you to pull back in any way or do something differently? And if so, are you happy or unhappy about this? Officers, 212-433-9692. So, again, residents, if you live in a high stop and frisk neighborhood in New York City, are you seeing a change? And police officers, are you bringing about a change with respect to stop and frisk? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. We would love to hear from you. Or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. So, Murray Weiss, something like stop and frisk doesn't go down 80% without a conscious decision on somebody's part, right?
Correct. This is not happening in a vacuum. The laws of physics are simply at play here, if you will, cause and effect. You have a number of elements coming together from the Judge Scheinlin's courtroom and her ruling, which obviously has been stayed, but her ruling that the police department had been virtually racially profiling and committing excessive unconstitutional stops in New York. That and the entire criticism that the police department has taken on a broader level, both from the public and the candidates running for mayor, the police department, I think the heat of all of that, and also they've carried on a policy here that has been very hard to defend. In my opinion, the astronomical number of stop and frisks in New York City at a time when crime is down so far are two facts that logically don't compute. So how can a police department that's both shrunk in size and is in a city where the crime rate has fallen go from 100,000 stop and frisks during Bloomberg's first year in office to 700,000 in 2010, how do you get that kind of productivity, first of all, out of a police force? How do you get the numbers to go that far without having the officers being instructed or their commanders told that this is a measurement of productivity? This is what we want you to do.
A quota in effect, right? A quota in effect.
You can call it what you want, but it's like a drive to keep crime down or to drive it down further. You know, there are tipping points in police strategies. You know, how far, how much is too much, and when are you crossing over into some territory that you don't want? So I think what came together, both the public outcry, the lawsuits, the elected officials or the people who wanted to advance their elected careers talking about it, the courts intervening cast enough light on it where I think that that the department itself recognized that that this was a policy they had to rein in. And whether Judge Scheinlin was correct or not in her decision on the on whether they were involved in wholesale unconstitutional behavior, the police, she certainly has had the impact that she was hoping on the police force. The numbers have dropped. They dropped like a stone in water. I heard right from the beginning, anecdotally, you know, police officers saying that we were stopping doing certain things that we would normally do. And I'll tell you, the flip side of any cause and effect situation, Brian, is that if you don't think criminals get the sense that police get a little less aggressive, that would be a very naive concept just as well.
And we'll talk about that, too. Murray Weiss, criminal justice editor from DNA Info, my guest. And so far, the calls that are coming in from are from people who have opinions about stop and frisk one way or the other, and that's fine. But we've had that conversation a gazillion times on the show over the last few years, really looking for experiential calls here. Do you see something different on the street? I know it's hard to say I haven't been stopped and frisked, and like that is seeing something in a way that's experiencing nothing. But if you see something that feels different in your neighborhood this year, with stops and frisks down 80%, according to the NYPD, call in and describe it, report it. Or if you are in the NYPD and want to talk about what you or your colleagues are doing differently or hearing differently from the top, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. So, Murray, the city is on track to have the lowest number of murders since they started keeping that record. I don't know what they did before that time. Oh, let's not count how many people got murdered. But people can argue that stop and frisk isn't necessary to keep shootings down as a result of seeing these two announcements really on the same day from the Bloomberg administration that through mid-November there's a record low number of murders and stop and frisk this summer was 80% down. And so people could argue that stop and frisk isn't necessary to keep shootings down. Other kinds of law enforcement tactics can work too. But if they only took half as many guns off the street, and that's the part of the story that I think isn't getting the equal play to the number of stops, they only took 99 guns off the street in the summer as opposed to 198 in the same period last year, then that could result in more shootings in the future. And it means they're not accomplishing the goal of stop and frisk as much, which was always part of Mayor Bloomberg's war on illegal guns. So how do you see the implications of that?
Well, listen, the only way to really see this is that, you know, the world of statistics and policing are not black and white. You know, there's gray area in all of this. And stop and frisking in New York City is an integral part of policing in New York. It was an integral part of policing forever, and it was an integral part of policing during the 1990s when crime actually fell by like 50%. It was halved. And there were 100,000 stop and frisks in New York leading up to the Bloomberg era. Crime toppled. And now you're talking about numbers of stop and frisks that are actually, if the year comes in at this level, you may even have fewer stops this year than you had 12 years ago. So perhaps you could argue that the right number of stop and frisks may be closer to 100,000, which is what it historically had been, and maybe you could even argue it should be higher. And they're getting guns off the street. They have tactics now and strategies. They tweak other strategies that have been very effective on combating crime in New York City. I think in the stop and frisk arena, what happened was they never pulled back and assessed whether it was a totally effective tool or whether it was getting too excessive in New York. So somewhere, the point is that somewhere in the middle or somewhere in the middle of all the statistics is sort of the right place to be. Having your entire police force stopping and frisking everybody in New York is certainly going to get more guns off the street, but you're also going to start reaching a level where you're interfering with people's civil rights because everybody you're stopping is not a criminal, and everybody doesn't deserve to be stopped, and nobody wants to be stopped who's just an average New Yorker who's not packing guns, who's not about to commit a crime, and that represents probably the overwhelming majority. I don't want to put a number on it, but it's probably 99% of New Yorkers are law-abiding, or 97% of law-abiding people. So if you're going around stopping everybody, sooner or later you have a policy that's in place that's not working for you, and it's not working for the public. Now, the if you reduce the stop and frisk in New York and you eliminate it, you're going to have criminals carrying more guns. That's a fact. They're going to take less guns off the street. So the policy that had been in place, I think, and which was more effective, is that the use of stop and frisk was by cops who were better trained. They knew who to look for. They were in areas targeting certain potential criminal elements, and they were responding directly to reports of criminal activity rather than officers wholesale stopping and frisking more people than they had to.
Right. So response rather than prevention, and the whole point for 15 years now has been prevention of crime, not just response to crime. Let's take a couple of phone calls, and then I want to play a two-minute clip of former New York City Police Commissioner Bill Bratton, who's considered one of the leading candidates to be the new police commissioner under de Blasio, talking about this yesterday. But first, we'll go to Nadia in Flatbush. Nadia, you're on WNYC. Thank you so much for calling in.
Hi, Brian. I love your show. I just wanted to say, I know you were saying you wanted to know about people's experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And mine, just when I walk down the street, I see far fewer police officers stopping minority men in front of cars. I see that all the time, and it was, like, really upsetting. And I don't see that as much anymore or at all. Additionally, my cousin and boyfriend are both police officers,
mm-hmm.
and they've stopped 215 people. So, and they've, they were saying that the new class is being told not to 250 anyone, because I think that they're also just trying to get a reaction to see that it was working and to maybe see if crime grows back up or whatever. But I want to speculate, but that's what they were saying, that the new class is being told not to stop and frisk anybody.
Nadia, thank you for the insight and your observations. And Murray, when she says they've been told not to 250 anyone, 250 is department speak for stop and frisk as we know it?
Correct. You know, you do a stop and frisk, and then you fill out a form that's called a 250. It's a 250 form. And, you know, she makes the point that I think when I was previously on the show, we discussed how, you know, the police department was targeting areas of high crime. They send their young, there's a very young police department. They'd flood areas with young police officers, and those police officers were basically instructed to conduct stop and frisk. And so here you have a police force that's instructed to do it. They're relatively young. They're not 100% experienced enough to know who to stop and when, and, you know, and actually how necessary, you know, they're coming out of the academy, they're aggressive, you know, there are part of the stop and frisk universe that's so poor is not only some people getting stopped frequently, too frequently, it's also how they're treated while they're being stopped and frisked. You know, you can, not only is it an intrusion, but at least if you feel that there's a point to it, then you can at least walk away with some sense that the police are doing their jobs. And honestly, Brian, most of the neighborhoods, you know, to the department's credit, you know, at DNA Info, we did a wonderful database study using per capita and the latest criminal the crime numbers in New York. And it showed that neighborhoods in New York that had been traditionally awash in crime are as safe as neighborhoods that you think are the safest in New York, from having lived here a long time. So in a way, the police department used their resources, spread it out all across the city. They didn't just protect the rich or certain neighborhoods. They drove crime down in every nook and cranny in this city, and they deserve a tremendous amount of credit for that. But I think at some point during the 12 years of this administration, there was never a moment where they said, you know, we have a safe city here. Maybe we should change some of our tactics. And some of them are extremely aggressive, namely stop and frisk. They're very intrusive, and clearly it has kind of bit them on the butt, so to speak.
Sunny in Brooklyn. Sunny on WNYC. Where in Brooklyn?
I live in Clinton Hill now.
And?
Well, up until the last year, I lived in Harlem, and I lived in the 28th Precinct, which is known, has been known in the past for being one of the more dangerous in the city. And I have to say, I lived around the corner from police headquarters and never saw police officers on the street sticking to any sort of regular patrol. The few times when I lived there, and I lived there for 3 years, I would call when I had to call the police because of disturbances, and there were a few. It seemed to take a ridiculous amount of time for them to get there, given that they were around the corner. But I moved out to Brooklyn in the last year, and I have to say that what I've seen specifically, and especially over the last 6 months, is that there are police officers in my neighborhood that I see repeatedly, and I see them in the same places at the same time of day, the same days of the week. And they seem to be really learning the neighborhood and learning what this neighborhood looks like on a day-to-day basis. And I think that I would expect that it would add to their ability to be able to tell and intuit what the neighborhood looks like when something's out of place, mm-hmm. rather than just randomly driving around and finding people who look like they're not right without having any baseline for what does look right for this area. So, and I really appreciate that. I think it's really fantastic, and I love that I know the faces of my local police officers, and I'm feeling like they're friendly faces and they're faces I could go to rather than being afraid of them.
Sunny, I really appreciate your call. And Murray, to her point, do you think that what she sees is backed up by her knowledge of what they do? If she's seeing police officers at the same locations at the same times of day, for example, on some kind of regular basis, would there have been less of that when there was more stop and frisk going on? And would that reflect a getting to know the neighborhood, getting to know the baseline, as she says, in the neighborhood in a different way than they might have 6 months ago?
I don't know the simple answer to that. You know, there's no better deterrent to crime than a cop on the beat. You see an officer, he's wearing a blue uniform. It makes the public feel safer, and it also deters a criminal from taking some action. And, you know, the police department constantly juggles manpower issues, you know, how they're going to address the issues in their community. Now, she said she lived in the 2H. She didn't see police officers. Perhaps, you know, they use their resources to do more plainclothes activities. Maybe they sent officers into some areas where there was some serious drug dealing, so they kept more police officers more in plainclothes, and they had initiatives to drive some issues down in the 2-8. So obviously she's living up there in Harlem, in East Harlem, and she's not seeing she's living in Harlem, and she's not seeing enough blue uniforms. So maybe the precinct commander there has different priorities in Clinton than she's in Clinton Hill, where he's got officers, he's got officers that he wants in certain locations where they're visible. That's sort of the dynamic of police in the city. Now, they got 7,000 or 8,000 less cops now than they had when Bloomberg started. They pay a tremendous amount of overtime, so they get more police presence that way. But, again, it's a resource issue. So now, just the last point on this, while this is a plus that she's seeing that officer, and that's great, that builds community relations, it gives public a sense of safety. If you're a criminal and you know that there's an officer on X corner every day at these hours, and you're interested in burglaries,
you're going to Y corner.
Pardon me?
You're going to Y corner
exactly.
Or Z corner.
So, you know, in some respects, that's a great thing. But on another hand, if you're a, you know, police strategist, is like that the best thing all the time?
Mm-hmm.
So it shows that all of these things are a little more complicated than people recognize.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC with Murray Weiss, criminal justice editor for the local news website DNA Info, as we talk about the incredible statistics from the NYPD this week on the one hand, murders down again this year to another record low since they started keeping modern murder records, and stops and frisks down in the summer by 80% compared to the same 3 months, July, August, and September of last year, 80%. So we're taking calls from you on what you're seeing out there as residents of New York City neighborhoods that have had high stop and frisk rates, or officers, if you want to call in, 212-433-9692 if you're doing anything different. And now let's play a little bit of an interview yesesterday with a Q&A with Bill Bratton, the former NYPD commissioner. He was first hired by Mayor Dinkins as transit police commissioner when that was a separate department, and then Mayor Giuliani elevated him to full police commissioner, and he was the one who really started with Giuliani the current modern era of policing as we know it, driving crime down with CompStat and the various other techniques that have been in place ever since. Well, Bill Bratton is one of the leading candidates to be Bill de Blasio's police commissioner. De Blasio has said so. So Bratton yesterday answered some questions, and we're going to play a two-minute clip, which will include his take on stop and frisk. And we start with his answer to the question, how low can crime go, and how would he get it down?
Well, the good news is that nobody really knows what is the bottom. And as I mentioned, 20 years ago, when it first began to go down, I know when I left office, people were saying, Jesus, that is as good as it can get. Look what Commissioner Kelly has done over the last 12 years. And actually, crime is now down for the 24th straight year. In Los Angeles, where our chief, it's now down into its 12th straight year of crime decline. So there really is not a bottom, because it'll tick up from time to time. But the good news is you get on top of it and push it back down. It's like we like to stay healthy, but occasionally we get the flu, like me, laryngitis, and you take the medicine and you deal with it.
Is that a national trend, though? It's not just New York City with crime.
Right? No, just the opposite. The national trend is up, with the exception of in California, crime is double-digit increases, except in the city of Los Angeles, by and large. New York City is still going against the national trend, which has been overall increase in crime for the last several years. And so, actually, I'd argue you'd probably find that the New York crime declines are contributing to keeping the crime rate from going up even further in the United States.
Do you think the number of stops can continue to go down? Number of stop and frisk can continue to go down, and crime can also be kept low?
Oh, sure. You've just seen that. There was an article in one of the papers over the weekend when I was reading them last night that the stop and question frisks are down by some dramatic number. And we're celebrating this year that crime is down by some phenomenal number. Homicides are down another 20-some-odd percent. I think it was the New York Post was reporting that gun seizures were down by some dramatic number. And what are you talking about? I think they were down by about 13 gun seizures. So it's how you describe it. The good news is stops are down. Crime continues to go down. And if that can improve the relationship between the police and the various communities that are most affected by it, well, that's a good thing.
That was from a panel yesterday on police enforcement, former Commissioner Bill Bratton. He went on to be the L.A. police commissioner. Murray Weiss from DNA Info. Some interesting answers in there, including that that stop, question, and frisk down by some dramatic number, and crime is down some phenomenal number, and he seems to think it's sustainable, even pairing those two. Is he applying for a job with this interview?
Well, he certainly has got the resume to return to the New York City Police Department, and since he left the New York City Police Department, his resume actually has gotten stronger. So, you know, he's certainly somebody who knows what he's talking about, and I think he makes some very good points, and they're similar to the ones that we were just making. You know, policing is a delicate ecosystem, to borrow an expression from another arena, and in the stop and frisk, you know, there's a lot in the police arsenal of strategies and resources that address, you know, crime in general. And clearly the you know, we're talking about the stop and frisk ones because the numbers were just completely out of line with what logic would suggest, and the public was feeling the effects of it, you know, and finally started, you know, kind of verbalizing it and complaining about it, and it finally took on the life that it's taken. In terms of, you know, the points he makes about, you know, can we continue to see crime at these levels and maintain them, I would suggest that he's likely right. There's no reason to suggest that stop and frisk have come down to somewhat more historical levels, that the other strategies in place that are also having a very big impact on why the numbers, the crime numbers, are down. Yeah. And in fact, you know, Bill Bratton really does deserve a lot of credit. Years ago, when he implemented a whole host of strategies and the dominoes of crime began to topple, I have to confess that I covered him then, and Jack Maple was his right-hand guy. He wore a bowler hat and had two-tone spectator shoes, and they came in with some high ideals, and I was, you know, dutifully skeptical as a journalist of how effective it would all be and how far. And Jack, who's passed away maybe a decade ago already, at a very young age, I said to him then, how far can the murders go down? And they had already been cut in half to about 1,000 from 2,000. And he says, I'd say go down to 450. And I looked at him like, you know, that would be like beyond comprehension.
And now we're like, surpassed it, more like at 300.
Yes.
By the way, on whether Bratton's going to be the next police commissioner, somebody in the know is speculating to me that de Blasio almost has to pick Bill Bratton, assuming Bratton is interested, because de Blasio certainly doesn't want crime to go up on his watch and blow his credibility. And Bratton is compatible enough with his point of view and is willing to try to continue to do it without as much stop and frisk as in the past. And he's got the credibility and the experience as, in a way, both an outsider and an insider to come in and, you know, do it and satisfy a lot of different parties, as opposed to the other major candidate who's being discussed, who's one of Kelly's top deputies, Phil Banks, that what does de Blasio really have to gain by elevating Phil Banks? Then he'll just come in and elevate a lot of other insiders, and you won't get the kind of change that you would at this point with a Bill Bratton. And politically, he doesn't get anything from sticking with Phil Banks anyway. You have an opinion about that?
Well, I think you can make, you know, in the world of speculation on who a newly elected mayor may pick, and there's the speculation on all points, and you're correct that the things you're saying are accurate. But you can make a case on many directions. First of all, one of the big problems with, I think, this current administration is that they weren't willing to accept crime rising at all. They didn't tweak their policies for a safe city. And secondarily, you can make a case for Mr. Banks. He would be a very good choice because he's African-American. And that would certainly signal the end of stop and frisk, and it would tell the public that de Blasio is definitely into progressive change.
And yet, I mean, at the same time, he was Kelly's number two. Kelly elevated him all the way up to the highest-ranking uniformed officer, right?
Yes, but I'll tell you what I say about Bill Bratton. I think anybody who doesn't, any mayor in this situation, Bill de Blasio or otherwise, if you look at Mr. Bratton's record, he's been the police commissioner of three major cities. He's a terrorism expert. He's had success everywhere he's gone. If you don't want to take Mr. Bratton, you have to have reasons that you don't want him. And you could say, well, I've had, you know, I'm not saying any of these things are not legitimate reasons. You know, we're building. He's been there, done that. You could say we're looking for the next Bill Bratton, mm-hmm. or forgive me for pointing this out, but we don't want another Irish white police commissioner, mm-hmm. who has a history in law enforcement. Mm-hmm. We want an outsider who may be somebody who was a prosecutor, somebody who ran different kinds of agencies to come in. Maybe we want an African-American police commissioner, because it signals to the public certain things that are important to a new mayor and to the public that elected him.
Yeah, and
but
that's
on the surface, you know, Mr. Bratton's resume and his ability to come and look at the way things run and tweak them or actually dramatically change them is, you know, he's got a very strong proven record.
And there may be an ego question there, too, whether Bratton would be as accountable to de Blasio as Banks, if de Blasio were to elevate Banks, whereas Bratton's already a star and considers himself a star. So maybe that's another factor that comes into it. Let's take one more call. Yuli in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Hello, Yuli.
Hi there. I just wanted to say that I have never been stopped and frisked, but I wish I had. I mentioned that I am a Mexican immigrant, and as such, I want to show the world that I'm not packing heat, and that I'm a law-abiding citizen, and I if that's a measure that helps prevent crime, I'm up for it.
You could show the world that you're a law-abiding citizen by not shooting anybody, not by being stopped for not doing anything, one might argue.
Well, yeah, that's true, but no one knows until it happens. So if I show the world that I'm not an abiding citizen and I kill someone,
That's too late.
That's kind of a,
yes.
A tall price for us. And
Yuli, you may be interested to know that New York's first ever Mexican-American city councilman is our next guest, coming up in about 2 minutes. Thank you for your call. 2 minutes, as soon as I ask Murray Weiss one last question on this new law, signed into law by Mayor Bloomberg yesterday, that bans cigarette sales to people between 18 and 21. It used to be at 18 you could start buying tobacco products. How does the NYPD enforce this? Is that who enforces it? How do they enforce that new law?
They will be part of the mechanism that enforces it, for sure. They'll send in youthful-looking cops undercover to, you know, supermarkets, bodegas, candy stores around town, whoever sells cigarettes. They'll probably make it clear that they're not 21, because somebody behind the counter is supposed to ask for ID. They'll give them some ID that says I'm not 21.
Will it compete with the other stuff? Will it make it harder to get more guns off the streets because they're getting more cigarettes off the streets?
It'll definitely, if it becomes something that the police department has to address, because it's an issue that that a mayor is interested in. Obviously, this mayor won't be around come January. The police department will have to put resources into it. You know, how many officers they will, you know, and then you make a case that they're taking that officer away from some other task that might be more effective.
Remains to be seen. Murray Weiss, criminal justice editor for the local news website, dnainfo.com. Murray, thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, we will meet New York's first ever Mexican-American city councilman-elect. He's Carlos Menchaca, and he represents an area from roughly Red Hook to Sunset Park. So stay with us for him.